This is Brandon Kelly, the host of Blue Wire's new podcast, Golden Goal.
Messi takes everybody on. Messi has got it!
From Lionel Messi to Marta to Pele, our show takes a deep dive into soccer superstars.
2-0, and he's... What a World Cup for Megan Rapinoe!
From Zlatan Ibrahimovic's brash confidence with the play to back it up, to Megan Rapinoe's heroic outspokenness and World Cup flair, each episode examines a personality of the world's game. We'll dig into Maradona's Hand of God performance and subsequent downfall, the teenage trio at Dortmund that signaled the next generation of superstars, and that infamous headbutt that slung Zinedine Zidane from glory. Golden Goal, soccer stars and the moments that made them. Premiering this summer on Blue Wire.
What's up, everybody? This is the Prince of Queens, Brian Myers, and the host of the Major Wrestling Figure Podcast. And you're listening to Top Rope Nation.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is now time!
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah!
I finished these fights.
Give me a hell yeah!
Top Rope Nation.
Learn to love it! It's the best
What's up, guys? This is the Monday edition of Top Rope Nation. Ryan here, and we're going to try something a little bit different today. We've actually never done this in the entire history of Top Rope Nation, which is now over 150 episodes deep. We thought for today's Monday show, we'd kind of deep dive back into the show's history, present, I guess you could kind of call this a greatest hits edition of Top Rope Nation. We've had so many new listeners to the show in the last 1 year that we have this really deep back catalog of shows. And a lot of the new listeners have just never heard of a lot of the content that we did a year ago, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, and so on. And so we thought today we would present something from the archives. And this discussion happened back on the March 14th, 2019 edition of the show. It was episode 88, so we're talking almost a year and a half ago. This was around the time when the Shield reunited, right before Dean Ambrose, Jon Moxley, left the WWE, and we were talking about what were the greatest factions in pro wrestling history. So myself, Kyle, and Justin, we put together our top 10 lists of the greatest factions in wrestling history. So what we're going to do here is we're going to present that discussion back from episode 88. Hope you enjoy it if you've never heard it. And if you did hear it, maybe give it a second listen. So we're going to go back in time, listen to that. We'll be back on Thursday morning with a new edition of Top Rope Nation. We'll see you then. Enjoy this discussion from the archives. The Shield. Huge moment this week. So I was thinking, like I said, where do they rank historically? And I started making a list. Justin made a list. I'm sure Kyle's list is up in his head, but Kyle's a walking encyclopedia of pro wrestling knowledge.
Well, so when Justin asked this, it's like, oh, what? Like I already didn't have that list.
Yeah. He probably have like a spreadsheet already made. I don't know. I had a difficult time with this because I think it's hard to rank a current act. You know, if 5-10 years from now, when we look back, I think their ranking will even go up from where it is now, but in the time period, it's always kind of hard because we look back with, especially like things from our childhood with a little bit of nostalgia. And I don't know. I tried to, when I was making my list, I tried to think of it because it depends what you're ranking. You know, are you ranking them as being successful? Are you ranking them for having great matches? Are you ranking them for like pop cultural significance? I put a lot of like popular culture significance within my list because I feel like there's three or four teams that are just so like beyond any other stable in wrestling history that it's hard to top. But then like the Shield's right there, right after that, I think. So Justin, give us your thoughts.
Well, I kind of looked at it as the same way as you. I had four things in mind, and that's impact on, I think, wrestling, which is kind of like the pop culture thing too. The members. So like, did the group make them stars? Were they already stars? Was there filler? Then three, any kind of great storylines they were involved in. And then four was, you know, the quality of their matches. Mm-hmm. Those were the things I was looking for. And I tried to be objective, but obviously when it comes to wrestling, it's mostly going to be subjective. And because of my age, it's biased towards factions since 1990.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, same. Kyle, your initial thoughts and your rationale?
I could just parrot what you said. Both you said, but Ryan in particular.
Jerk.
Finally, I get some credit on this damn
I love you, Justin Joint. You know that. There were three that immediately jumped. Like, I was like, all right, these are the top three factions. And it's, you know, undisputed, to quote Adam Cole. But after that, like, for me, I started thinking, I was like, yeah, the Shield measures up pretty well. And, you know, the sort of pop culture transcendence impact on the business also, for me, is the biggest factor whenever I evaluate wrestling. I know last year? Place to Be Nation, when they did like their greatest WWF/E wrestler of all time. To me, I just don't know how your top five in some order is not, you know, Hogan, Austin, Rock, Bruno, and Cena. Like those, like, I know Mount Rushmore's four people, but like that's those five are like the Mount Rushmore of Titan Sports.
Yeah. And to be clear with our factions list, we're looking at all of wrestling. So beyond WWE, we're considering WCW, NWA, Crockett Promotions, all of that, New Japan as well. So to just start it off, when you look at the top of the list, to me, it comes down to two. And I have a hard time deciding like who I would rank among those two as the best faction of all time, but it's the Horsemen and the NWO. Would you guys agree? Were your top two, or who did you have in your top two, Justin?
Neither of those.
Really?
Oh,
that's surprising. Yeah. Kyle, did you?
They were both in my top three.
Yes. Wait. Who did you say? Who's your first one?
So I'm going back and forth between the Horsemen and the NWO.
Okay, yeah. No, I'm sorry. I do have one of those in my top two.
Okay. I felt like in the top three, I had the Horsemen, the NWO, and DX. I feel like those three are pretty solid at the top.
Yes, those are my top three, but DX is above the NWO.
Okay.
I can't think about that. To me, the Horsemen are pretty. If you want to start, well, I guess they're the go-to. You know, I guess if you don't think the Horsemen are the top faction of all time, I'd be interested to listen to your argument for that. But to me, it's just like they're kind of the standard for which every other faction is judged on.
Yeah.
And I mean, the Horsemen had some lean years and some poor lineups. There's no doubt about it. But, you know, for me, those, you know, like you said, Ryan, were the clear top three. Like, there's a significant drop off just because of the impact on the promotions that those mm-hmm. three had compared to everyone else. I mean, there's some that we really liked, but, you know, maybe the impact wasn't there. But NWO was three for me because as much as they, you know, strapped the rocket to WCW business, you can make a pretty strong argument they were just as important in killing that company.
Yeah, that's true. It got really watered down, especially when they started doing the different groups with the red and the white. I ended up going with the Horsemen, I think, for number one, just because of longevity. And although they had lean groups, like Kyle said, it didn't get watered down to the point of the NWO. I think pop culture significance, the NWO outranks the Horsemen because they were on top during a more popular era. But I think, you know, if you throw up the four, I think a lot of people, even beyond wrestling, that were around like in the 80s at least, would know what you're talking about. But not to the level of the NWO. Like, growing up in the 90s, if you went to the mall, you saw NWO shirts. Like, yes. Everyone is familiar with the NWO shirt. So I think pop culture wise, NWO of the factions and DX are probably at the top because of the era. But when you look at the whole picture, like match quality, storylines, the people that are in the groups, like Justin was saying for his rationale, pretty tough to beat the Horsemen as a whole package.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Justin.
I would just, you know, to add on the NWO thing, they are, you know, one of the most impactful factions in the history of wrestling just because of the boom it created for wrestling. And to kind of kickstart it off was one of the greatest moments in wrestling history was Hogan turning heel. And with the Four Horsemen, their origins and those original teams, especially, you know, my favorite being the one that included Barry Windham, they were so good that that was one of the few factions where you could take a guy put him in the Four Horsemen, and it makes him more prestigious. And not only that, but even today, you can just go around the WWE roster and say, like, ooh, he would be a good horseman type, you know, wrestler.
Mm-hmm.
But having said that, I had the Horsemen 2 and NWO 4. Just because NWO, it's like, for one, their storyline, they had a couple good storylines, but it always led to just the most disappointing matches you've ever seen. They never had great matches as a faction. So really, you just had, you know, the origins and the boom. And then, you know, a year and a half later, it just, like, kind of like how Kyle pointed out, started sinking that company.
Mm-hmm. So who'd you have number one?
Oh, man. I had Bullet Club slash.
Oh, dear God.
I have them fourth. So I'm not, like, too far away from you, but I do have them fourth. Actually, I think my top four are pretty well set. And after that, it's really tough. I feel like after the top four, the Shield can really come anywhere. You know, to get the Shield back into this discussion.
My argument for Bullet Club is, I feel like it's to a lesser extent, but similar to the NWO, they have this pulp culture significance on the wrestling industry. There is not a wrestling show you can go to where you are not going to see some variation of a Bullet Club shirt. It transcended Japan. Like, it reached all the way across, you know, the ocean and came over here to the United States. It created stars. It put Finn Balor on the map. It did a ton for AJ Styles. It did a ton for Kenny Omega and the Bucks. And it basically led to what should be, you know, the third or second most interesting wrestling company in the history of professional wrestling.
Yeah, I had them four, and pretty much all the reasons that you listed there. I don't know that WWE, since the heyday of Austin and The Rock, have released a t-shirt that's pop cultural significance reaches what the Bullet Club has. Like, you're right. You see those shirts everywhere. Indie shows, WWE shows, unbelievable. I think, man, 3 or 4 years ago, I had, like, an argument with some people on Twitter about is the Bullet Club pop culture? And they all said no. And I'm like, are you guys crazy? Like, you're seeing these shirts everywhere. It's definitely pop culture. And that was when they had signed, you know, to have the shirts at Hot Topic and all that. And
just, yeah, I really think it just raised awareness for quote unquote independent wrestling, and just it widened the entire landscape.
Oh yeah. I mean, there's never been anything close outside of WWE, you know, since WCW. We're not a business that got to this level as the Bullet Club. So, and yeah, membership wise, a lot of big stars, great workers, lots of great matches with these guys. Pretty much carried New Japan for the last several years, at least
beginning their business. I mean, people forget Japan, you know, in the early part of the century, no one was talking about Japan.
Yeah, like when Brock went there, nobody was talking about it. You know, it was like, yeah, it wasn't, it didn't have the, didn't have the prestige maybe for a lot of fans over in North America, at least, that it did like in the 90s. You know,
yeah,
like, I mean, I remember getting into tape trading and I had to get the Japanese tapes, but then, like, through the early to mid 2000s, nobody was really talking about Japan.
Yeah.
So it definitely got North America on board for sure. And you can't really, you can't underrate that. I mean, that was huge.
No, so. Look, I'll very honest with you. They have a very strong argument to be the fourth faction on this list for me. Very strong. I don't think they have the pop culture cachet the top three groups do. I hate this because, you know, it's hard when people get in the wrestling bubble. I think within the wrestling bubble, like, the pop culture, or whatever you want to first phenomenon, the Bullet Club is so strong. But if you mention Bullet Club to the public at large, do they have any clue what you're talking about? Whereas I feel like the NWO people, like, that didn't even watch wrestling, just like whether they wanted to or not, knew that the NWO was wrestling. DX, I think, you know, you would have people, you know, if somebody said, oh, that suck. Like, if somebody made a suck it reference, they'd be like, oh, that's wrestling.
Yeah, everyone knows that. Yeah, sure.
Maybe the Horsemen not. I mean, I don't know. It was tough. You know, NWO and DX, their heyday was when I was in high school and college, so it was easy to tell. But, you know, I mean, even the Horsemen, and people throw up the four fingers, I think, you know, there's a lot of people who know what that means.
I would agree. I don't think it has reached the pop culture success of those three.
And as Randy Orton pointed out, man, the Bullet Club, they're not afraid to borrow a few things.
I was going to say, that was my next
one. What a promo that was by Randall Keith Orton, touching on all the right buttons.
Isn't that interesting, though, that if we look at the top four, and like me and Justin have them in our top four, number one and number four, this group is started out as like a cosplay of one of the other groups, you know?
Which is why I don't think why I personally could not have them above the NWO. Although, again, they have, you know, not yet, will not, whatever, have the destructive influence that the NWO did. It really, you know, when Hogan and Nash and those guys would just not give up their spots, that caused a major problem. The NWO basically ate WCW alive. As much as we all, you know, sometimes give Vince shit because he never portrays outsiders as equal or certainly not better. Mm-hmm. The one example of a promotion allowing an outside group, quote unquote, to look stronger than its, you know, itself, than the promotion itself, that promotion died. You know, WCW basically was never allowed to fully get its heat back against the NWO and prove that, you know, they started calling the pay-per-views WCW/NWO. I remember that was a big talking point in 98. It basically was like, oh, okay, well, the NWO is just as important as WCW. It's not just this heel invading group that we're going to be back to make WCW even stronger moving forward. It basically ate the promotion alive.
And yeah. So obviously the culture at large, NWO is, you know, heads above Bullet Club, you know, but as far as, you know, kind of kayfabe in a way, but as far as star making, I think Bullet Club is far better than NWO was, unless you want to make an argument for Scott Steiner or Marcus Bagwell. And then also, you know, kind of your point, like NWO ended up killing WCW, whereas Bullet Club has kind of created its own new company, kind of the exact opposite of what NWO does. Yeah. That's kind of why I rank it a little bit higher.
Yeah. To your point, your four criteria, pop culture impact, members, storylines, match quality, I'd say the Bullet Club easily three of those four for sure. Yeah. Members, storylines, and match quality, I definitely have to go with Bullet Club. So it's how much do you rank the impact factor, I think. But I think top four, top five, for sure, for me, Bullet Club would be in there.
So. I mean, the NWO never did, but it never was about making stars. It was kind of about taking existing guys, mm-hmm. you know, who were already huge names and just banned. You know, it was basically, you know, let's put a bunch of guys who cut their teeth in WWE, WWF, and, you know, make them an outside type group.
You know, like maybe someone like Conan wasn't known to not the North American, but the United States crowd as much. Like that made him a bigger star, but he was a big star in Mexico.
And Hall and Nash were much bigger stars in WCW than they were as Diesel and Razor Ramon.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
There is one match I'll point out. If you think you've never seen a good NWO match, and trust me, there are not many. Slammery 97, the main event of that show, it's the Wolfpack, Hall, Nash, and Waltman against Ric Flair, Roddy Piper, and Kevin Green. Give it a watch. I know you're listening to those names and you're like, there's no way in hell. Give it a watch. It's in Charlotte. Crowd's hot. Kevin Green always, to me, was a guy who could have, you know, done something in wrestling had he not been still in the NFL. It's a fun match.
I'll tell you what, only our Kyle Ross would pull a match like that out of his ass to recommend.
Is that 98?
97, Slambury 97. It's a show that I did not watch it all the time. Like, it was very skippable. But somebody said, oh, this match is good. And I was like, and I watched it. I was like, holy God, like, this is the heat. I mean, like, the Wolfpack are great heel stooges in the match. They, you know, they work exactly like they should. For people who didn't think the NWO ever gave WCW guys anything, they do in this match. If you remember, if just trying to jog memories, remember Nash went on Nitro and cut this kind of shootish promo about Flair and Piper and about like old guys holding everyone down when he was in WCW the first time?
Vaguely.
Okay. That promo led to this match. So,
okay.
But it's other than the Randy Savage DDP matches, there was, I mean, not a lot of match quality from the NWO.
Yeah. So, okay. Outside of those guys, and do you have someone, another faction in mind, Kyle, you want to throw into like this top four discussion? Because you had the same top three as me.
Yeah, no, not really. I mean, you know, one thing with DX that's interesting is successful both as baby faces and heels.
Yeah.
And every iteration, you know, I mean, for me personally, my favorite will always be the Sean Hunter. When the first started. But then they were had a great baby face run with Triple H as the leader, X-Pac and the Outlaws joining in. Then, you know, a year, you know, after they broke up, they reformed in 99, more or less. X-Pac and Outlaws were flunkies for Triple H at that point. The dynamic was a little different as heels, but they were effective in that role. And then, you know, years down the road, obviously, the Sean Hunter 2006 babyface iteration is not.
I was not a fan of that. I think we've talked about that on the show before.
Yeah, but you know what? It was kind of over, so I guess you have to give them some just due. And here's another thing we have to consider with DX. You know, we talk about the Bullet Club kind of, you know, being a cosplay of NWO. When DX first started in 97, what was the knock on them? Everyone's like, oh, they're WWF's kind of, I mean, it wasn't necessarily apples to apples, but people were saying, oh, WWF's trying to have their NWO. I mean, never grew to the size of the NWO in terms of members, but it very clearly was like the same type deal.
Yeah. You know,
kind of a group of heels who acted like they were above the promotion.
Yeah. And plus, you had Hall and Nash, and everyone knew they were buddies. So,
yes.
Yeah.
Remember when they showed the click incident on Raw? What a wild time 1997 Raw was.
Yeah, it's true. Really good stuff so far there. Hopefully you guys are enjoying this conversation. But before we go any further, I do have to throw a shout out to our good friends over at betonline.ag. Sports are coming back, and so are your chances to bet on your favorite teams and events. And there's no better place to start than our exclusive partners, Bet Online. Get in on the action for this week's big UFC fight, or check out odds on NASCAR, Formula One, and the Premier League. Can't wait for your team to come back? Bet Online has futures odds, including win totals, division winners, and even league championships. Or check out daily simulations of Madden and NBA 2K to watch and wager on. Visit betonline.ag and use promo code BLUEWIRE to receive your new welcome bonus. That's promo code BLUEWIRE. BetOnline, your online wagering experts. I feel like, yeah, you get us outside of this top three or four, and then it's like anybody's ball game. And so, like, I can see how people could rank the Shield like fifth, you know, in history. I can also see how people could say, you know, maybe top 10, maybe just outside the top 10. It just kind of, it comes down to what you're a fan of, you know. And as I look at my list, it's pretty difficult. I'm not quite sure where I'd put the Shield, but I do think top 10 for sure.
They are easily the best WWE faction post-Attitude Era.
Oh, right? Yeah.
Either be them or Evolution. And the thing with Evolution is you look at the members and, you know, when they come out, they had a certain cachet and, you know, the line in the sand is like a really awesome song. But wow, did they preside over a dog period of Raw. I mean, those Raws were not good when they were on top.
Yeah.
At all. So that's kind of like a mark against them. And did the Shield ever get a fair run? We need to talk about that because they were broken up way too early.
Yeah, certainly broke them up way too early. That hurt them for sure.
And then they were broken up foolishly. I mean, they're literally the only group that I think has been foolishly broken up twice.
Yeah, it's weird because some of these groups, it's like they kept on too long, like the NWO. And then here's the group that didn't go long enough.
Yeah. I mean, to me, when I watched that the main event in the building, I was thinking to myself, imagine breaking this group up. Like, why do they have, like, I get that you want to push them as, you know, individuals, but why do they have to be broken up to do that?
Mm-hmm.
You can have them still be loosely associated, and then when necessary, they can team up again. I mean, that 2014 turn was just so ill-timed with, you know, they were on top. They'd just been put over Evolution two straight times. And Daniel Bryan, your top babyface, went on the shelf for an extended period of time. You needed a top babyface act.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, obviously this last time when they did it, the Ambrose heel turn was, you know, an unmitigated disaster.
So would we all agree, like with the Shield, Reigns and Rollins went out on to bigger and greater things. Ambrose, this is the highlight of his WWE run. like unquestionably. Would you guys agree?
What?
Yeah, right, I mean, he was world champion, but
yeah, true. I would say like his shield, to me, his shield run was his height though. Like I feel like I had like high hopes for him coming out of the shield. And even when he started with the shield, everyone was talking about him like, oh, he's the new Roddy Piper.
That's what's so funny is like looking at where they're all at now. And then you look at who they gave the championships to.
Yes.
Reigns and Rollins got the tag titles while Ambrose got the United States title. I mean, yeah, it's just amazing to look back on.
It's just like when I'm trying to think where I'm going to rank them, like I don't want to rank the faction based on what the guys did individually. Do you know what I mean?
Well, but I think that's part of it. I think you should look at what they were able to do with each other and what that propelled them to do later on in their careers. And like the superstar, the star power involved. I think that's important.
Okay. Yeah. What do you think, Kyle?
I think that's interesting because let's like look at those top groups we talked about. Like, I feel like a lot of them, you know, again, it wasn't about necessary with the Horsemen. There were some instances individually, but like Flair was already a made guy when the Horsemen started. Flair had been on top for 2 years, yep, if not longer, when like the Horsemen officially started. Tully had been a top guy. Arn had been at the time, you know, Ole Anderson. I mean, these were like not, you know, new names. They did. Luger was a huge benefit to him to join the group when he replaced Ole. But, you know, even Barry Windham was already kind of a made guy. He'd been in world title matches the year before.
You already kind of pointed out, I think NWO catapulted Kevin Nash and Scott Hall. And I would say DX catapulted Triple H.
Yes, for sure. I would. Yeah. And that was a point I was going to get, you know, Triple H, people forget, he was the opposite of interesting, mm-hmm, before DX started in the summer of 97. I mean, remember, people were always like, God, what are they going to give? I mean, that was a knock, mm-hmm, on it. People were like, what are they going to give it up with this guy? Remember the signs, Triple H, mid-card for life?
Yeah. I think Brett kind of bashed him on Wrestling with Shadows. This is a guy that nobody's ever going to like or something, like the character at the time, the mm-hmm, snobby guy. But, yeah,
give credit. I mean, yeah, I mean, you look at the time when DX started, fall 97, and a year after that, where Triple H was, you know, he was like the second most over babyface after SummerSlam 98, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
So the other thing I wanted to say about the Shield real quick is, you know, obviously they made themselves into superstars, but also I think more than any other faction, especially as a faction, by far and away the best matches.
Yeah, all the trios matches were really good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot of these teams, they didn't have a lot of faction matches. Like I think the Hart Foundation, they had the Canadian Stampede, because the Hart Foundation to me is in the top 10.
Yeah.
But they weren't, I guess they're working some tags here and there. But.
Yeah, I mean, Owen and Davey have the Raw tag against Austin Michaels, which is really good. Well, I mean, when you talk match quality, I mean, we got to talk Horsemen. I mean, War Games.
Mm-hmm.
Hello, you know, yep, and lots of other, you know, By the way, one thing that's interesting, because I thought about, you know, Justin brought this up, and I meant to bring it up earlier, that, you know, he's not alone. I think most people consider the Rick, Arn, Tully, Barry version the best version of the Horsemen. Only around for, like, a couple months, like 5-6 months. Like, Barry joined in April when he turned on Luger, and then Arn and Tully quit by the fall to go to WWF over money.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, as much as everyone remembers that, you know, and thinks that, you know, Rick has said himself on DVDs, oh, that was the best version, he was only around for 6 months.
Yeah. Yeah. The other thing here I've been thinking about as we've been talking is that a lot of we've been talking about springboarding people to stardom from these groups. And you look at a group like the Hart Foundation, for that group, that was like their last hurrah. You know, like all these guys came in established, and after the Hart Foundation, none of them were ever like that big again. Obviously, WCW blew it, Brett.
Yeah, I'm saying none of them were even in the promotion again.
Yeah.
The thing with the Hart Foundation, that 97 run, is that was just one of the best storylines, and that was just, it created some of the hottest crowds. It turned two nations against each other as far as wrestling.
Yeah, yeah. Impact-wise, the Hart Foundation ranks really high because that was kind of the start of WWF's business turning the corner. Right before, I guess that's like the start of the Attitude Era, really.
I mean, it made a a red, white, and blue loving Ryan Drosty by a Canadian fan.
That's right, at Epcot Center in 1997.
Oh, I've heard it all now.
Yeah, that was my family went to Disney World in the summer of 97, and we went to Epcot Center, and I immediately wanted to go to the Canada section so I could get a flag. It's true.
My favorite part of the Hart Foundation was the formation. When, remember, Owen and Davey had been, they'd been teasing a breakup angle for months. And then Brett pulled a power play, actually, behind the scenes once he agreed to turn heel. For those who don't know, I mean, he basically was like, no, well, I want to do a faction with Owen and Davey. And they just put the kibosh on the split angle. They were wrestling Owen and Davey on Raw. Brett comes out and cuts that unbelievable promo where Owen is like crying at the end. Like, mm-hmm. That was the best. Like, seeing Brett and Owen embrace after, you know, basically feuding for over 3 years at that time was just so great.
Yeah. They rank really highly for me. That's one of my favorite periods in wrestling history. Mm-hmm. I would put them above the Shield personally, just because the storylines were so great. Like, I like the Shield a lot. I don't feel like any of their storylines like grabbed me, like what happened with the Hart Foundation that year.
Well, I mean, unfortunately, you know, they're in an era where the classic storylines maybe just aren't there.
Yeah, for sure.
What's the Shield's best storyline?
Is it Evolution? About that, and
is it the babyface turn and feuding with Evolution?
Yeah, I think it's that babyface turn going from the Wyatt family to crushing Kane and New Age Outlaws into Evolution. And then, honestly, I think an argument could be made for this return at Fastlane. I mean, obviously, that's kind of not a storyline as much as it is just a story.
A one-off, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, like something they'll show on the highlight reels always.
Hart Foundation, again, not a long shelf life.
No, I mean, we're talking seven months. Yeah, 7.5, 8 months right in there, starting in March to November. And, well, they kind of started, well, Brett's heel turn started in March, I guess, so then we'd be into April. So, yeah, about 7 months. Yeah,
it wasn't until April, I think, that they started and they didn't solidify. Because, like, Neidhart didn't join till maybe even May or something.
Yeah, he came in real
Pillman.
Late.
Yeah, him and Pillman. I can't remember.
He had like, a contract with some indie groupers. I think, yep. I feel like we talked about this on the SummerSlam 97.
Yes.
So, that's a good... That's a good spot to promote our Patreon, which I haven't been talking about. If you like listening to us talk classic wrestling, we started a Patreon page, patreon.com/toprope nation. We produce 2 shows exclusively for Patreon. You can hear like the first 10 minutes, I think, on our podcast feed of the SummerSlam 97 show. And we talk a ton about the Hart Foundation on that show. But if you want to hear the whole thing, yeah, patreon.com/toprope nation. If we get some more subscribers, we'll start putting out more Patreon-only classic shows like this because we love doing it. We just need people to sign up to make it worth doing, and we'll produce more shows.
I'll do it anyway. Just keep recreating, I'll talk about
content.
Yeah. You know, it was a comparable group to me for the Hart Foundation, and a group that I think we're all going to have in our top 10 is Dangerous Alliance.
Oh, yes. Yeah,
like, you know, in terms of recessive, now it was not to the level that, you know, the WWE's business resuscitated, obviously. But, you know, when Dangerous Alliance got going, I mean, people forget. Look, I can watch just about any era of, like, any, you know, any part of WWF, WCW, since, like, the national expansion. I can basically watch any era. The summer of 1991 WCW is absolute, unmitigated horse manure. Like, when
that,
like,
is such a Kyle Ross. I love that. Like, that is such a Kyle Ross line.
Like,
right,
that 4 months after Flair left is awful. Like, it is so bad. And they had no idea what to do. And then here comes the Dangerous Alliance, man, and things picked up. And you talk about a group where the guys could all be utility guys. They did so many six-mans on WCW Saturday Night, you know, tag team matches on Clashes. Even, you know, they technically were not Dangerous Alliance yet at this point, but like the Arn and Larry tag match against Dustin and Ricky Steamboat at Clash 17 is like one of the best WCW matches of the 1990s. You know, that War Games in Wrestle War 92, many consider that the best WCW match of the 1990s. So they're a group, obviously, who is very much near the top, even though, like, you know, 1992 WCW business is not great. But I think, you know, without the Dangerous Alliance, God knows where that promotion would have ended up going into 1992.
Yeah. Especially when you look at talking about the members.
Yes.
In such a you know, a collage of past greats, current greats, and obviously a future top three wrestler of all time. And more than that, all those guys could freaking go in the ring. All of them. They were just so good.
You know, to what you just said, I remember I have like a buddy who like did not watch WCW at all in the early 90s. And I told him, like, I recommended the Dangerous Alliance to him. He asked me a WCW question. I was like, you should watch the Dangerous. He's like, well, who is that? And I named the members, and he was like, holy shit, that was a group? I was like, oh, yeah. I was like, oh, yeah.
Turn on that award-winning WWE Network. I was, yeah. Educate yourself.
Yeah, I mean, because that is one of the great periods in ring, at least, of WCW's history. That, like, first, you know, very end of 91 into, you know, the summer of 92.
This is like the prime Justin Joint era of WCW watching as well.
It's prime wrestling in general for me. I mean, you know, I was in that sweet spot of being 11 years old, and my dad had a satellite that got pay-per-views for free, and oh boy, that was a good 6 months for Justin.
I feel like when we became friends, like half our discussions were about that era of WCW at the time.
It's the best.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, you look at it, Super Bowl, which we've mentioned on the show ad nauseum, Super Bowl II. Then Wrestle War was after that. And Beach Blast 92. I mean, that's like, those are three awesome pay-per-views. You know, WWE Network just put up that run of Superstars in 1992, those episodes. WCW was much, much better during that period than WWF.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Yeah.
It got bad towards the end of 92 for when, you know, Watts thought Heyman was making too much money, and he basically disintegrated Dangerous Alliance. And oh boy, it was real small crowds by the end of 92. But man, it was great while it lasted, the Dangerous Alliance. Again, not around long, similar to the Hart Foundation.
Yeah, but you know, if you're not around long, but that period is really good, you can rank them high. I think I'm pretty well set. I think I'm going to put on my list the Hart Foundation 97 as number 5. And then when I look at the rest of my list, I think I'm putting the Shield at number 6, to be honest. I got a longer list that goes beyond 10, but I was kind of like trying to mark who I would throw in my top 10. I think of all these, I got the Shield, and then beyond that, it could really go in any order.
I want to hear some of your other high, both of your guys, some of your top, who's rounded out the top. Because I assume the 7 that we've mentioned so far, we all would consider top.
Yeah, I have the Dangerous Alliance. Yep. I have the Nation of Domination.
They just missed my cut.
Yeah.
God, they were, yeah.
You look at star making, though, man. The Rock came into his own in the
he
Nation.
He did.
That's what I kept thinking. I kept coming back to that. And they had some really memorable stories too, like when Ahmed joined the Nation, I remember being like blown away.
In their feud, know? With DX.
Yeah. They rank pretty high. But
yeah. I like the Rock led version a lot better than the Farouk led version.
Oh yeah, me too. I agree. More entertaining. So I have the Dangerous Alliance also that is in top 10 consideration, Nation of Domination, Evolution. I got the New Day up there.
Okay, so we're considering them a fat. See, I didn't know what to do with that.
Yeah, I kind of went back and forth on that too, but yeah, three guys. Yeah.
Well, it's not just because it's not the size, it's that I just feel that they're a tag team more than a stable that has three guys.
Yeah.
I think once you get to three, and because I had completely forgotten about them, but I have them ranked 7 is the Freebirds. And it's like, yeah, I didn't even get to experience the real impact they had because that was more down south, and I didn't really get to watch that. Because you talk to any wrestling fan from down south, and they're going to talk about Freebirds versus Von Erichs as one of the greatest feuds of all time.
I did a deep dive. I've watched almost all of 83 World Class on the network. Dude, you want to talk about some of the best crowds in wrestling history? Give me the weekly crowd at the Dallas Sportatorium.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, these people were just absolutely emotionally invested in that feud more than like any crowd has been in any feud in history, really. I mean, the Freebirds are top 10 for me. Yeah. And they're more Shield than New Day to me in terms of being a faction. I've said it before, I think the New Day might be the greatest tag team in WWF history.
Yeah.
And what's funny is we don't think of the Shield as a tag team.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I got the only other ones that, and I, like I said, that was in no particular order, but I'm just going down the list of who I had jotted down in that order. No ranking, but, and the only ones left were the Freebirds and the Corporation. Which I thought the Corporation did some pretty memorable stuff.
Not Ted DiBiase's Corporation, I hope.
No.
Because that would be on the list of one of the worst wrestling.
Yeah. Yeah. So those are all, I guess that puts me at
no League one, of Nations.
3, 4, 5, 6. That's putting me around 11 or 12. These are the ones I had starred as in consideration for my top 10. So I guess from those six, I'd have to pick four. If I got the Hart Foundation at 5, the Shield at 6, I think I'd have to probably, of those, go with the Freebirds next. And that would be like my 7th. And then maybe Dangerous Alliance at 8, Nation at 9. And then I'm picking for my 10th slot between the Evolution, New Day, and the Corporation. I might put Evolution at number 10. So the New Day would just miss it. The Corporation would just miss it. And then on the outside, others that I really liked, you know, I really liked Raven's Flock for a while in WCW.
I was going to make sure we brought them up because I was a huge fan.
Yeah. I liked Raven's Flock a lot.
I've been watching the Brood
was pretty cool, you know,
but they never did. I felt they always should have done more with them. You know, like that was like the thing, like if you talk to people in the crowds in 98, everyone's like, these guys are cool. But they never really did anything with them. Remember, they just joined that. Okay, you talk about one of the shittiest factions of all time. The freaking Ministry of Darkness must be mentioned. Because that was bad.
Yeah.
Corporate ministry, that was all bad. Do we consider the Heenan?
Oh no, we lost Kyle. Him. We lost him right when he was bringing up something I really
wanted
to talk.
The Heenan family, that's another one of mine that just kind of misses the top 10.
Now see, I don't consider them a stable, and if I did, they would be top 5, and I don't consider them a stable because they were never really together. It was just individuals being managed by Bobby Heenan.
Yeah, it was like you knew the group of people Heenan was with, but you didn't really like, you didn't see them together a lot, all of them together. Yeah,
that's what
Kyle,
I think.
The Heenan family.
They're more of just a tree from Bobby Heenan.
Yes.
Kyle, you missed it. What I said was, I don't consider the Heenan family a faction, but if I did, I'd have to have them top 5. They were more just individuals all managed by the same person.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with that. I just wanted to throw it out there just for
more. I'm glad you, I had that in my notes. I just forgot to bring it up.
Yeah. I wanted to go back to Raven's Flock. I've been watching a lot of early 98 Thunder recently, obviously after our discussion.
Yes.
What a thing. They were fun. Man, they
that's
really
a callback to last week's show, by the way, if you haven't heard it. Yes.
Yeah. Also, when I watch early 98 Thunder, like I feel like the same complaints about it like would apply to modern WWE. You know, it very much in terms of like it's pretty with like some of the storylines, you know, kind of not going anywhere sometimes or being forgotten. And you know, maybe questions of elevation, which always, you know, people sometimes wrongly criticize WWE for, but that was far more prevalent in that era of WCW.
Yeah. So who else would you have like kind of rounding out your top 10, Kyle?
I feel we hit them all. Like, yeah. you know, after the big three, I said, you know, okay, Bullet Clubs, they've got a discussion for number 4. I would consider them 4. Then I think you're looking at, you know, Shield, Dangerous Alliance, Hart Foundation, Freebirds. So we're up to 8.
You haven't given us your thought on Evolution.
Yeah. So like I said, like you run through the list, you know, if you just showed me a picture of the Evolution or you sent me a link to Motorhead's Line in the Sand, I'd be like, oh yeah, Evolution. But it cannot be discounted how bad Raw was in 2003.
Yeah, like, it was a good like star making group, but I no question put Shield over.
Okay, that part of the equation they rank very high for what it did, because Orton and Batista were nothing really before that group, and both went on to become headliners. I've said it before on this program, you know, obviously we've all come full circle with Triple H and Batista working each other at Mania this year. That Triple H Batista storyline, which began late 04 and then, you know, culminated at WrestleMania 21 and actually what kept going on before that, was one of the last great money drawing storylines for WrestleMania. I mean, now, you know, they just sort of put on a big match, but like you talk about an angle that took months to develop. That did show did big business on the back of that angle and feud. I mean, when Batista gave the old fake thumbs up and thumbs down to Triple H and Ric Flair, that's a top 10 Raw moment, baby.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Me and my friends imitated that so many times after that. Yeah. Justin, your final thoughts on your top 10? You can read off your top 10 if you want to. Kyle's is probably off the top of his head, but I'll read mine one more time. So I got the Horsemen at 1. NWO at 2, DX at 3, Bullet Club at 4, Hart Foundation at 5, Shield at 6, Freebirds at 7, Dangerous Alliance at 8, The Nation at 9, and Evolution at 10. So just missing my cut, I would say, would be New Day, Corporation, Raven's Flock kind of is up there, and The Brood.
I got Bullet Club, Four Horsemen, NWO, DX, Shield, Hart Foundation, Freebirds, Evolution, New Day, and Dangerous Alliance. And I just want to throw out there one that obviously is not great by any means, but I just love the idea of, was Legacy.
Yeah. It was a good idea.
It was kind of like Evolution, but with Orton as the leader. You know, it was kind of, you know, we talk about things that, you know, parrot other previous groups. I think, you know, Legacy was definitely, you know, Randy Orton in the Triple H role of Evolution. So,
all right.
Well, I guess my top 10 would be New Day. If we're counting them, I initially didn't count them as 10. Evolution is 9. Dangerous Alliance 8. Hart Foundation 7. Freebird 6. Shield 5. Bullet Club 4. NWO 3. DX 2. Four Horsemen 1.
Nice. I think we're all pretty close. Like, I'm not on the same page. So.
Yeah, Four Horsemen in terms of star making, I guess, you know, you could make the argument Pillman and Benoit. I really liked that. I mean, I know that we're not supposed to say any nice things about Chris Benoit anymore for good reason, but, you know, I really liked that version. I love the match, too, that got them back together where Pillman, Arn, and Flair all turned and beat the tar out of Sting.
Mm-hmm.
Halloween Havoc 95. Love it.
Yeah.
Just because the crowd actually bought, like, man, wrestling crowds, the way they used to be. Like, I'm just thinking about that match. If you want to go back, I know I've given many recommendations of the show, but here's another one. If you want to go back and watch that match, it's a tag. When Flair asks Sting to be his partner, because Arn and Pillman keep beating him up every week on Nitro. This is like the early era of Nitro. And then it's just a big, you know, ruse, and they all kick Sting's ass. The crowd today would totally see through that, right? Like, everybody would know what was coming. That freaking live crowd. I mean, you know, even like for me, when I was like, okay, this might happen. But like that live crowd was just disgusted when Ric Flair turned on Sting.
Mm-hmm. And same thing with Hogan's NWO moment. Like that would have been, people would have been talking on Twitter about that for weeks.
Do you suppose there was somebody in the crowd yelling, "Hey, that's Blade Runner Flash"?
Yes.
I feel there's got to be some territorial stables that we didn't.
Like. Oh, we're definitely missing a bunch. That's why I said mine was post 1990, basically.
Yeah.
The thing, like, back to like the point about the Heenan family, it was generally like, you know, in that era, it would be like a manager with a group of folks rather than like a stable. I mean, like Mid-South had the Rat Pack.
Gary Hart, didn't he? JTACs or something like that.
Well, that was in NWA. Like Gary Hart had his thing, and then like, you know, in World Class there was Devastation Inc. Incorporated too. Skandor Akbar's group, but I don't think those groups would make my top 10.
Yeah, I'm pretty confident in this top 10, and then the group's kind of just missing out. So, guys, this has been a fun discussion.
I'm sure we've missed one. People are going to mock us on Twitter.com.
Aces and eights.
Yeah. At Top Rope Nation, send us your thoughts. Oh, I was going to read some of the listeners because I tweeted this out earlier. And
yeah, we need to do that. We need to give the listeners some.
Yeah, we got quite a few responses. So let's see what some of them said. I said I'd read some of these on the air. So, oh, let's see. A lot of people disagreeing with each other. Got some conversation going.
We should have probably mentioned the Wyatt family, by the way. That was
one. Yeah, I had them kind of in that just missing out, too. Let's see. Mr. Furman Torres, he had the Horseman at number one. Also, he had Dangerous Alliance at number two, DX. And then number four, here's one we haven't talked about, the Main Event Mafia. Right? A little TNA.
Insert cricket noises there. Yeah,
I wouldn't agree with that one, but the other three, all right. Let's see.
They're below the LWO for me, baby.
At Sober Wrestling, NWO, Four Horsemen, Freebirds, The Shield, he said, yielded three top guys, including the face of the company, is WWE's last male home run act.
That's what I'm talking about. Near and dear to my heart, that guy.
Good take.
Aunt Dale 86, DX Heart Foundation, NWO, Horseman Corporation, Nation, Heenan Family, Ministry, Freebirds, Evolution. What else? We've got Headlock Talk. He said the Horsemen are probably number one in my book, NWO second, with the Shield a very close three. Kyle, our guy out there in New Jersey, I believe he's got the Horsemen, New Day, DX, NWO, and the Shield. Let's see, who else do we got here? Someone said that they'd rank the Shield below the Horsemen, Freebirds, NWO, and DX. You know, pretty close to where we were at as well. So, yeah, and then we got a lot of people adding each other here about, oh, they thought they were wrong. This is why they disagree. And
love discussion.
Yeah. Derek Tropel being Mr. Sarcasm out there. The natural born thrillers. All right, everyone. Well, hit us up at Top Rope Nation on Twitter, topropenation@gmail.com. If you want to send a word to the show, leave us a rating. We'll read it on the show next week. Thanks for joining us. Take care.
Peace.